Welcome to Career Tools. Today's podcast, what to do when your manager makes a bad decision, part three. The questions this cast answers are, why do managers make bad decisions? What can you do about your manager's bad decisions? And is there ever a right time to challenge a decision? If you'd like answers to these questions and more, keep listening. We can all agree, in-person learning is the best kind of learning. However, if your managers are all over the globe, even dispersed all over North America, on-site training is more difficult and expensive than you might be willing to sign up for. And that's no worries. We offer virtual effective manager, effective communicator, and effective hiring manager training. If you're interested in getting your dispersed team of individuals trained together on Manager Tools concepts, send us an email to maggie@manager-tools.com for more information.
So our next reason is emotional factors. As we mentioned, managers are human, and stress, fatigue, personal emotions are all going to impact their decision-making ability. After any disaster, there's an after-action report created so that the emergency services, first responders can learn from their mistakes. There is inevitably mention of these types of human factors as contributing to the cause or prolonging of the disaster. You know, I remember seeing a lot of, you know, FAA reports, which in the States, if you know, a plane crashes or there's an incident where a plane is involved, the FAA does a very thorough investigation. And one of the factors always listed is human factors, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so there's what was the technology or the equipment, but also the human, the person behind the yoke. And so while everyday work that we're all doing is not at the level of disaster recovery,
most of us,
or, you know, anything like that.
There's lots of people from the FAA listening to this.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. But we experience the same stress and fatigue and other personal emotions that play a factor in our work. And your manager is the same.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly it. So what can you do if your manager is, I'm going to say, is dealing with these emotional factors, or that's what's leading you believe to this decision that you don't necessarily agree with? You can assume positive intent.
Have you heard that before?
Have you heard that before? Has anyone heard that before? I don't know. Okay. Yeah, no. So that, assume positive intent. If your manager is generally a nice person, assume that a one-off bad decision, sudden snap or out of character action is due to an emotional factor that you are not privy, right? It's about an emotional factor you don't know about. Managers, let's face it, this is true of all people, but it's also true of managers, that managers generally don't tell their directs what's going on at home in their personal lives in the same way that maybe directs sometimes tell their managers. Managers, they have a responsibility to ensure that their team's work is completed and that the factors that affect that, even if they're happening at home, are relevant. Managers might even tell their own managers when something's going on at home, right? But then in turn, put on a brave face for their directs, not tell their directs. So if you see your manager as behaving in a way that seems what you think of as tired or out of sorts, we would suggest that you could ask them, human to human, are you all right? But know also, you may ask that and they may not tell you anything, and that would be perfectly reasonable on their part, because you are not owed an answer. You are not privy to what's going on for anyone around you at home. So if they don't want to share, then you have to be okay with that. Just as far as your future actions or behaviors are concerned, we'd encourage you to think about what you can do to be as supportive as possible. So for example, will some extra documentation or extra preparation for a meeting help them out? Could you maybe work ahead a little bit, ahead of given deadlines, for example, for your manager? And if not, don't worry. Your manager will usually ask for help if they think they need it.
Yeah, that's so good. And I just want to give an example of something that may seem a little outside the box of how you could be supportive. I had a boss once. She was great. She was amazing. Really good. But she got hangry. She knew it.
Oh,
she was aware
yeah.
of it. She
Me too.
She would tell me like
Was she me? Man,
no.
Please ask. She was not me.
No,
okay. Just
no.
checking. Just checking.
Because the next part of this story is because you and I, when we work together or now, are not co-located, right? So
yeah.
I can't like bring you a snack. But I would absolutely if I knew, it's 11. Right. So like breakfast is worn off if she ate breakfast,
yeah.
which she didn't always.
Yeah.
And then it was like, hey, I'm running to the vending machine. Do you want something? Do you want a snack? And she'd be like, oh my gosh, yes. Will you get me a this? Right. Or whatever. And, you know, it wasn't presumptuous. I got to the point where I did bring a snack, you know, if I had one or something, but I never went full Ted Lasso and, you know, did biscuits with the boss. But it was just something, you know, a little that maybe you don't think of, right?
Yeah.
And that's the other thing. Sometimes the things that affect us emotionally are, am I getting enough sleep? Which none of us are.
Right. Which none of us are, generally.
You know, am I hungry? Am I hangry?
Uh-huh.
Right? And those types of things. Can you be supportive of those things? Well, you can't make them sleep, but
right.
you can definitely, you know, bring a snack or offer to have lunch brought in or something. I mean, those types of things you can absolutely do. And maybe sometimes we don't think of those.
That's a good one, dude. That is a really good one.
Cool. So our next one is lack of experience or knowledge. I mean, new managers are just that. They're new.
Yeah.
They don't know everything.
By definition, they lack experience.
Right. And for inexperienced managers, there's usually two hurdles. The inexperience in managing people, and then the inexperience in the specific knowledge of the role that they're in.
Yeah.
Right? And whether it be project management or accounting or any of that stuff, right? And it's funny because I know people who are really good at one or two of these things.
Mm-hmm.
They're really good at managing people. And I've seen them come into environments and they were out of their depth in terms of the technical prowess, right? And what they needed to know.
As many of us are. Mm-hmm.
But they had a leg to stand on,
yeah,
right?
Because they're good at the managing part. Yeah,
yeah,
sure.
Yeah. And I've seen it the other way around,
uh-huh.
right? And so you have to understand that new managers are often trying to get a grip on the subject matter and trying to manage the people, and doing all of that at the same time is a challenge. And experienced managers have more confidence when making decisions without perfect knowledge because they've done it, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's always a confidence inspiring thing. And even experienced managers don't know everything. They can't, right? But they do tend to look more confident because they have one part of the job down, the management, the people management side, right? Even though they're still going to have knowledge gaps.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly it. So, if your manager is inexperienced and you think that could be contributing to the decision making that, again, you think appears not as good as it could be, what you can do is ask questions. Part of the problem of the lack of knowledge for anyone or any individual is that you don't know what you don't know. That's the thing. So, if you don't know what you don't know, you can't ask about it. What that means, though, is when people ask questions, you realize through the question they just asked that there's an area where your knowledge is potentially missing. So, you may have heard this phrase. I think many of us have, almost all of us have. There's no such thing as a stupid question.
Mm-hmm.
And we know it's become a bit trite. And it's not always true. Asking questions when things are not clear is indeed helpful to both you and the person who has to answer the question. The phrase used when teaching doctors, one that we use often at Manager Tools, is see one, do one, teach one. Because we learn as much by teaching someone else at times as the original learning of the original process.
Mm-hmm.
That is, you don't have to ask questions in public in a big meeting if it's going to slow down the agenda, or it's going to derail the meeting, or it's going to take you wildly off topic, or it's just going to be a mess. You can ask privately to your peer or to your manager during another meeting or in your one-on-one. Hopefully your manager's doing one-on-ones with you. You can offer also for a manager, again, who may be inexperienced, to do research or to find out answers for them, right? And doing research is time consuming, even in the era of ChatGPT, because as we know, it doesn't always give you the right answer. So it might give you an answer, which you're then going to have to research and ensure is accurate. So
yeah, please do that second part.
Please do that second part. Exactly. Please do that second part. Hallucination. So generally know that research or being good at that kind of inquisitive research style is not a skill everyone has. To go a step further, your manager probably doesn't have the time to do the research if they're new and they're trying to figure out what their job entails to begin with. So being the one to do the research does provide then for you three benefits. It helps make your manager better at making these decisions, which helps you more in the future. It helps give you more knowledge. And it also develops your research and report writing skills as well. So offering to find information for them that they do not possess based on inexperience doesn't just help them. It also helps you.
Absolutely. And see one, do one, teach one underscores actionable guidance that we gave earlier in this series of casts, which was ask questions.
Yeah.
The benefit of teaching is, yeah, you do have to understand it pretty well to teach it, but you also get to hear questions that you didn't think of, right? So when you're in the position, right, when you're newer, ask those questions. It helps everyone.
Yeah.
Even if you think you're being, you know, you're upsetting the apple cart or, you know, being difficult. You're not. You're being helpful.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. Another reason that we have to talk about is sometimes a decision a manager makes could be perceived as being a bad decision because of their inability to adapt.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
This is another one of those negative assumptions that a lot of directs make about their manager's bad decisions that isn't really fair. Some managers may be making decisions or choosing strategies based on outdated information. Absolutely. That could happen. That could be a thing. They may be, quote unquote, doing what we've always done, right? That could absolutely be a thing. It is a thing. I know.
Yeah.
They could have a rut around never choosing the most expensive option or always siding with the customer. And they could have good reasons for all those options that still hold true.
Exactly.
That still stand.
Mm-hmm.
They could be, speaking to some of the things that we've talked about earlier, they could be following a mandate that came from their boss or from corporate or headquarters, right? They're almost certainly, in almost every case, doing mm-hmm. their best under the circumstances that they've been dealt.
Exactly.
When I used to teach effective communicator or effective manager, I used to ask the group, raise your hand if you're going to work every day actively seeking out ways that you can sabotage your organization. And no one raised their hand. And I go, then why do you think that the people around you are?
Right. Like they're doing things on purpose, just messing them up. They know there are better ways to have it done. I'm going to do it this way. It's going to be awful, but I'm committed. It's not happening.
And this assumption demonstrates what's wrong with so many of the conversations that begin with, why does my manager make bad decisions?
Mm-hmm.
It's because that conversation is being had between directs with no reference to the manager at all.
Uh-huh.
The directs often are, you know, around the water cooler. Is that still a thing?
I think it is.
It's proverbial at minimum, if even, and hopefully it is still a thing. But or you're at lunch, or you're just griping, right?
Yeah.
About the way things used to be, or the way things are around here, or the way things aren't what they told us they were going to be, mm-hmm. or whatever, right? And they're not asking with genuine, open curiosity, willingness to learn, and treating their manager as another human being.
Yeah.
But instead, choosing to find fault with their manager as a subject for that salacious gossip, right? That's just, it's so much more fun to gossip rather than saying, well, but let's look at all the ways that this manager is doing their best and is trying. Well, that's boring.
Yeah. Benefit of the doubt, really lame.
You don't see midday soap operas.
No.
Where they're talking about giving people the benefit of the doubt.
No.
No. And, you know, that's the part that's not fair about the conversation. And not that that manager is temperamental or makes bad decisions, but that they're trying their best.
Yeah, that's exactly it. So what can you do if, in this case, it's an inability to adapt that is causing this decision-making? And this, I was just going to say something I don't think is true. I was going to say, this is the part where we repeat a lot of the things that we've said already, but I think that that's already been pretty heavily occurring so far, so it's not new. So similarly to multiple of the previous sections, first, always assume positive intent. Second, offer information that you think your manager might be missing. So share your perspective, offer to do research. Instead of moaning and complaining about your manager being a stick in the mud who always thinks that the internet is made of pipes, do something useful and helpful for your manager to allow for them or to aid them in making better decisions. And choose your battles. You can't change another person. You can't make your manager change everything he, his team, and this organization does to make it run the way you think it should be run. To be clear, if your aim is to have your manager change your organization to be built around the way you think things should work here, then you should start your own company. Because then you can create an organization that revolves around the way you think it should be done. However, you want to decide what swords you're willing to die on, essentially, and let the rest fall where they may. Not everything is worth dying for. In fact, most things, I think we can all agree, are not worth dying for. You may be familiar with Horstmann's laws. One of our co-founders, Mark Horstmann, came up with a series of laws built upon or kind of surrounding these professional moments where we sometimes think contrary to what is accurate. One of the Horstmann's laws is, well, it's called essentially, the other way works just fine. And the way we explain it is there's someone else out there who has succeeded to the same level you have with exactly opposite intuitions to the ones that you've had. And to be clear, when they look over at you, they wonder how you got where you are too, because you did it completely different. Your idea is the right way to you, but only because it's your way. And your way being the only way is obviously wrong. It's routinely controverted. So it's that. There are so many ways of achieving the same purpose. It doesn't need to be done your way to be done just as well. That's something to keep in mind. Hey folks, if you're in California and you're looking for an opportunity to see Manager Tools, we have got just that opportunity. September 12th and 13th, we'll be in Los Angeles, California, hosting our Effective Manager and Effective Communicator conferences. We'll be over at the Sheraton Gateway Los Angeles Hotel, which means that if you're not from California and you're looking to fly in, we're in close proximity to LAX Airport. We hope to see you there.
The next reason that we need to discuss is fear of taking risks.
Mm-hmm.
Every one of us has a specific tolerance for risk.
Yeah.
And everyone's different.
Uh-huh. Again, everyone's different.
And managers who fear taking risks have a lower tolerance than is required for the job that they are in. Some of us are quite happy to bungee jump, and others think it's foolhardy. No matter what the safety protocols are in place, it's still dumb to do, right? Mm-hmm. There are people who just won't do it. And different roles require different levels of risk tolerance. For example, a call center manager with a high level of risk tolerance might allow 50% of their team to be on vacation on any one shift, believing that it'll be fine, the rest of the team can manage. Another manager with a lower level of risk tolerance might only allow for 10% of the team to be on vacation because they want to be more assured that the team on board with can cope with any fluctuation in call volume. If you worked for the second manager, you might be frustrated that you can't get time off when you want it because they only allow one person to be off per shift or something like that. And their decisions aren't made on something, you know, that's rational, mm-hmm. but based on fear.
Yeah.
And maybe you don't see that, hey, we never find ourselves working for that manager and we're unable to facilitate that call volume, right? When our mm-hmm. call volume spikes. You don't see that side of it,
no,
right?
No, you don't see that side.
No. In other cases, a manager might decide not to go ahead with a project because their tolerance of risk is lower and fears the project might fail. In these cases, some opportunities may be missed because of fear of failure.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, some failures may be avoided too.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm. That's exactly it. So what can you do if you think you've got a manager who's got some decisions being made out of this fear? First, take into consideration the fact that just because a decision is made based on fear doesn't mean it's not the right decision. And this goes back to Andrew's example, right? The call center manager. And for a company entering a new market, right? That is, it's kind of akin to saying, just because you're paranoid doesn't mean they're not out to get you.
Yeah.
Right? It's that. As the people who see, again, I didn't get to go on vacation because he only lets one person go on vacation at a time, and we could allow for so many more. You don't see the back end of that, right? You don't see the fact that that day when only one person was on vacation, there was call volumes that required 100% of the people be there, but one person was gone. And imagine what happened if 50% of the people were gone that day. You don't see yeah. that. And another thing to keep in mind is predicting the future for you and everyone else is pretty imprecise. As far as science goes.
Oh, yeah.
In terms of things that you think might happen, you can be right in hindsight, but no one is right 100% of the time when predicting forwards. That is, your manager is a human being. They're really just trying to do their best. And what you can do, again, is present them with the best information supporting your side of any argument. And then again, follow the guidance in the podcast on professional subordination, which is to say, support the decision that has been made. Even if it's based upon fear, support the decision.
Absolutely. And learn from it.
Yeah, exactly. And learn from it.
Yeah. The next reason we need to talk about is poor communication.
Mm-hmm. I talk about this one all the time in conferences, all the time.
Oh, if human factors are the number one mentioned issue in crises after action reports, then poor communication is number two. Human beings chronically undercommunicate because we communicate all the time in our own heads and we assume that the people outside of us are hearing and thinking what we are.
Yeah.
We are continually surprised when people don't know what we know when it's obvious. We told them at least five times. How on earth could they not know? And often your manager isn't making a poor decision. They're just poorly communicating the rationale for making that decision.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the reasons that we've listed here, a manager might tell you if you were to ask. They might say, it's a mandate from my manager. Well, that's what my boss wants us to do. Or I had to decide by 5 p.m.
Yeah.
But for others, it's possible that they may not know or be able to articulate why they made a particular decision. They'll give you a rational explanation for that decision that they think they used. There's this experiment called the rubber hand illusion, which neuroscientists use to demonstrate how it only takes a few minutes to trick someone into their brain believing that a rubber hand is their own hand. And when looked at it on like an MRI machine, the subjects of these experiments' brains have basically switched off the use of the hand that they believe no longer exists. It's so crazy how powerfully our brains create rational explanations for things that don't seem to make sense at all. And again, you can't fault your manager for doing this because we all do it completely, you know, unconsciously.
Yeah. I mean, if your brain can do that with a physical part of your own body, they can certainly do that with ideas that are being discussed in your organization. So yes, poor communication does attribute to poor decision-making. And what you can do about it is, again, assume positive intent. Poor communication isn't just a problem for your manager. As Andrew mentioned a moment ago, it's a problem for all of us all of the time. For example, there has never been an employee survey in our experience where employees said, we receive too much communication from our manager. And I've also got another data point. Every person listening to this right now is thinking to themselves, I wish I got more communication. No one that's listening to this right now is thinking, oh, I get way too much communication from my manager. I know exactly what they're doing all the time. It is just the worst. So what that means is assume that the decision that's being made has a sound rational basis and that you just don't know what it is, because that's probably the most likely event. There's a sound logical decision. You just don't know what it is because people are not as communicative as they probably should be. So what you can do really in this case is be the solution. Make sure that you're communicating your part of the project or your part of the process or whatever it may be. You can't complain that you don't understand someone else's decision-making process due to lack of communication if you are yourself not clear about what you're working on and your part of the process itself. So again, don't throw stones.
Yeah, exactly. You know, if you want hard data, I'd be hard-pressed to think that there's any therapist out there that works with people who isn't willing to say a lot of relationship issues come down to communication.
Oh my gosh,
Or
lack thereof.
Yeah. I heard a therapist say the number one, this isn't my therapist. I just heard a therapist say once that the number one reason for divorces is uncommunicated expectations.
Right? Yeah.
Which comes down to just lack of communicating, just poor communication. Now, we're not equating marriages and your relationship with your manager, But relationships between people have to involve communication.
There's an organizational example I use often in our conferences. And it's kind of the explanation to that. I'm going to say that flavor of the month project, mm-hmm. right? There's this huge new initiative, this massive push in your organization. Okay, everyone get on board with this. They usually give you a really short timeline. We're doing this thing. It's going to work. We're going to put it into action. And then 4 months later, we realize as people within an organization, oh, what happened to that super huge new initiative that no one's working on?
Mm-hmm.
And we get the impression as people within an organization that what has happened is the organization has thought of something, ooh, really cool. Look at this shiny new object. And then they've just kind of gotten, just forgot about it, just let it like wither on the vine, which is more than likely not the case. More than likely, what has happened is the powers that be, the people at the top of the organization, thought that thing would work. And they've been monitoring the data, the results of that new initiative, and it's not provided the results they believed it would. So at the top of the organization, it was turned into a non-priority. Organizations are really good at communicating the start of new initiatives, really, really bad at communicating the stop of new initiatives.
Yeah.
So the people within the organization are like, oh, what happened to that thing? I guess we kind of forgot about it. I guess everyone just forgot about it. Flavor of the month, which is probably not what happened. It was a trial with a distinct start and end date, but you were only told of the start of
right.
it. Absolutely. So in summary, in respect to why managers make bad decisions, note, we're well aware of the fact that it's a question that people ask on Google every single day. In the spirit of assume positive intent, we'll assume that those people genuinely want to understand their manager's decision-making processes. And that's why they are asking this question of the internet in order to make sense of what their manager's doing and help that person out. So if that's the spirit in which you're asking the question, we'll also assume you generally want to help your manager make better decisions in the future. Most people do, but most people go about it the wrong way. They gripe about their manager at the water cooler instead of taking the positive, proactive steps we've recommended. If you want to help your manager, which I assume you do, please enact some of these steps and remember that they're a human.
That's right.
Remember they're a human. Thank you so much for joining us this series of weeks, Andrew.
Happy to be here. Great to talk to everyone again, even though they're not talking to me back.
I know, right? Glad to have them listen to me again.
Yeah.
I like it. Join us again next week for a new topic.